right, it's the second half kickoff.
The morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group.
I think we've made some good adjustments for the second half.
I think so.
I think we can stop Joe Burrow now.
Ouch.
Or at least contain him.
Well, we'll see if Clemson can do it in a couple of weeks.
I don't see him throwing 7 second half touchdown passes. That was a first half fluke.
Yeah, he messed things up in the second half and only ran in for a touchdown.
I didn't throw
any TD passes.
I was shocked and dumbfounded to see him in the game.
Yeah,
in the fourth quarter. I thought that was kind of irresponsible.
Yeah,
in a way.
That was a lot of criticism going on for that. Hey, it's time to bring in our man Mike Griffith from the AJC's DogNation.com. Mike joining us from New Orleans. Hey, Mike, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, guys.
Yeah, excellent. I know it's an hour early there for you, so we appreciate it. And, man, let's get right to it with the Dogs. We knew the players that weren't going to be down there, and we had a number in our mind of how many it might be. Were you shocked? Are you shocked at how many players are not going to play in this game on Wednesday against Baylor?
I don't know. You know, yes and no. I mean, look, it was a tough season. It was a really tough season. And, you know, you got a couple guys that, you know, 3 guys chose not to be here. They could be here, but they chose not to. And then, obviously, there's some substance tests and some academic things. You know, it was a tough year for Georgia, you know, and there was a lot of pressure on these guys. And obviously, some didn't handle some things right at the end of the year. So they walked a pretty steady line through the season. But, you know, it is disappointing that a few names in particular aren't here, a few major contributors. It was also disappointing to me that some of the guys that could be here, you know, chose to quit and get ready for the draft instead of finishing it out with their team. And, you know, I think Jake Fromm kind of let it be known that he feels like guys should be here. And I think DeAndre Swift let it be known that he feels that way too. So that, to me, that's pretty interesting.
I definitely agree. And you did write a story about Fromm, and tell us a little bit about, you know, what you think there, because he is saying that he's got his draft grade and he's going to really dig deep into it once the Sugar Bowl is over.
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting with Jake. You know, Jake chooses, you know, Jake is a very experienced guy with interviews, and he chooses, you know, what questions that he wants to answer, especially a hypothetical question. And it wasn't like he offered it up and, you know, came out there charging mad about who's not there, but, you know, he's asked a question, he explains it, and he says, you know, yeah, I play no matter what my draft stock because, you know, he loves the university, he loves the team. And it, you know, anybody can say that. Anybody can say how much they love their university. Everybody can say how much they love their team. You know, but actions speak louder than words, right? Are you playing for your teammates? You know, are you truly appreciative? Do you want to finish playing the game? Because let's face it, I mean, there's a risk every time you go out there. There's a risk every time you train. You know, the guys that quit the team, they get hurt in the gym working with a new trainer. They could pull a hamstring. They could drop a weight. I guess it just depends on, you know, your level of faith, your level of commitment, and you know, just, you know, what you feel like, you know, your level of, I don't know, responsibility, I guess. Because by the logic that a lot of people say, you know, some guys could quit mid-season and not come back. They say, well, you know, we got 2 or 3 losses. We're not going to win a championship, so why risk playing the second half of the season? You know, by this logic, maybe Trevor Lawrence should just train for the next year and not play his next year at Clemson because he might get hurt. So, I mean, sports would be a lot different if everybody just quit, you know, when there wasn't a quote-unquote championship on the line, right?
So an 8-team playoff, that would mean there would be 4 more teams where players may not necessarily quit and get ready for the NFL. At least you would think there would.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Should Anthony Edwards not play, you know, the second half of the basketball season because Georgia doesn't have a national championship basketball team? Should he quit early?
You would find people that would say, I mean, I wouldn't, but you would find people that would say yes. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, the Memphis guy did,
yeah.
the Wiseman guy.
Yeah.
I think he would have been suspended a few games. But, you know, if that's the mentality, then, you know, who are they going to play? You know, I mean, just I just feel like we've gone the wrong way as a society in some senses with, you know, well, you're owed this, and you know, well, if it can't do anything for me, I'm not going to do it, right? It's about me. It's a me. And everybody said, well, you know, hey, man, you know, he could do it. Well, you can't do it. And it is your right, right? But it's everyone else's right, you know, to have an opinion on it. And,
absolutely.
And, you know, maybe in 2 or 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, it's not going to matter, guys. But this week it does matter because there's a football game, and those guys are going to put on that Georgia uniform with that G on the helmet, and they're going to represent something a lot bigger than themselves, you know, something that paved the way for them to have success, a place that chose them, that gave them the opportunity over other players to be a part of it. And this week, we're going to talk about the players that chose to be here and play and represent, and we're going to talk about the ones that didn't. So this week, it's a story. You know, after this week, not as much. But it's made some people uncomfortable. It's made some people squirm. Nobody wants to call out anybody, but, you know, it is what it is. Georgia's playing a game, and some guys aren't here to help their team.
Let me ask this about the game itself and what it means for the program, because this laundry list of players that are not going to be here, and as you mentioned, some by choice, some by maybe just, you know, their own demise, things they've done that don't allow them to play. But the fact is, there's a whole lot of players that are not going to suit up for Georgia Wednesday night, where if you had just picked any game during the regular season and said, hey, Logan, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, they're all not going to play. In my mind, I instantly think Georgia doesn't have much of a chance to win this game. So if Georgia doesn't win on Wednesday, is that an indictment of the team itself, or is it one of those it doesn't really matter scenarios? I'm curious your opinion on that.
Well, everybody has different opinions on it.
Right.
Okay. Not everybody's going to. Some people say it's a bowl game and it's meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's a 3.5-hour program of Georgia football that's going to be on national television at 8:45 p.m. on Monday night. And there's going to be millions of people watching, and they're going to come away with an impression of the University of Georgia. And there's going to be a graphic that's going to show all the players that are missing that were either academically ineligible or failed drug tests. And for the 30 seconds that those names are on the screen, people are going to go, what the hell is going on at Georgia? Now, if you say it doesn't matter, that's fine. You can, that maybe it doesn't matter. You're a Georgia fan. Yeah, just one game doesn't matter to me. Okay, but what about the 99% of the people watching the game that aren't Georgia fans? And what's their impression walking away from it, right? Does it leave an impact? You know, is there a recruit out there, a recruit's parents that's a sophomore that maybe Georgia was on his list and now they're not? And what about this scenario? What if Georgia wins, even if they're shorthanded? You know, that leaves a mark. That leaves an impression, too. You know, it's an opportunity for Georgia to say, wow, look at Georgia. Look at all that young talent.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the way those guys came through. I don't know. Do you got an impression of Oklahoma right now after they lost 63-28? I do. I got an impression of Oklahoma that they don't belong in the playoffs. I got an impression of Oklahoma that this is, you know, 5 straight postseason losses for them in the college football playoffs, and maybe next year we should hold that against them in the selection process. I bet you the Oklahoma people feel different. I'll bet you they would tell me that the final score doesn't really matter, that a loss is a loss, and that nobody was going to stop Joe Burrow. That's what they would tell you. I would tell you that Oklahoma's defense is awful, and that should be considered by the college football playoff committee. You know, just like Georgia fans are going to say, some are going to say, well, it doesn't really matter. Well, that's what a Georgia fan will say. But what does the Alabama fan and the Auburn fan and the Tennessee fan and the South Carolina fan, what are they going to say? Are they going to, oh, yeah, Georgia had a lot of guys out. That didn't matter.
Mike, is it a little disconcerting that, you know, you're talking about finishing the drill and players wanting to play, that had Georgia, you know, made the playoff, upset LSU in the SEC championship game, there's still several of these guys that wouldn't have been available because of, I guess, some decisions they made, whether it was academic or, you know, other things, testing things. Is that a little disconcerting, though, to think that they kind of maybe made some bad decisions before they realized how the season was going to completely play out?
Well, I don't know the timeline.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know when somebody decided to light up that joint or that bong, right?
Yeah, no. But even the guys that,
tell you that.
Yeah, that didn't make the grade, too.
Or didn't finish that assignment,
yeah.
or didn't go to college. I don't know the timeline. But look, I mean, it's the number of it is what is takes you back. And I've maintained for a while, and you know, that Georgia's had internal leadership issues. And I think that's the norm when you have a class like 2017, and you had that group of leaders, and they leave, there's a vacuum, right? You got a bunch of guys that are used to following. And they, maybe they're not as good a leader because they've had such great leadership before. And Georgia needs some guys to step into that leadership void. And Kirby is aware of that. I mean, that's why they sent these guys down to, you know, Florida to ride jet skis together and spend time together and bond. And that's why it was important when DeAndre Swift started coming out speaking midway through the season. And, you know, Jake tries to speak and, you know, different guys try to lead. But what's telling is that a couple of those guys that were the permanent captains are guys that decided not to show up. So you wonder how good of leaders were they? If two of the four guys that you voted the best leader on the team don't even show up at the bowl site, how good a leader were they during the regular season? That's what I want. That's what's most. That's the biggest indictment.
I think it's
to
a
me.
Great point. I agree.
I mean, two
point.
Of your four permanent captains didn't even show up.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about their leadership? I mean, I'm sorry. You know, you can say, well, that's their right. They don't need to play. Okay, don't play. But show up and lead, right? I mean, to me, that's the indictment, is that you're a permanent captain. And it's something that I think Kirby should look at and say, you know what? We're not going to vote on permanent captains until after the season. Because
mm-hmm.
if you don't show up at the bowl game, you don't need to go down in the record books as one of our permanent captains. That's one thing I will say. I will put a strong opinion out there on.
Fair enough. Mike, I'm jealous, one, because you're in New Orleans. I love that town. I wish I could be down there. But I'm also jealous that you and the rest of the media finally, for the first time this season, got a chance to talk to offensive coordinator James Coley this week. You wrote about that interview on DogNation.com. What were your takeaways? Was there anything telling, or was it just a bunch of coach speak that we couldn't read too much from?
Oh, no, I think it was really telling, and it was a lot of what Kirby said. You know, and I said this, I did a live chat on our Dog Nation Facebook page and for like an hour, kind of talked about a lot of things. But the point I made is the people that have decided to hate Jake Fromm, the people that have decided that it's all his fault, they're not going to change their minds, okay? It doesn't matter how much logic you put out there. It doesn't matter if Kirby Smart tells you that Georgia runs the same pass patterns as LSU and their guys don't get open. It doesn't matter if James Coley tells you that guys, you know, aren't running routes they're supposed to run, and so Jake's throws look inaccurate because guys are running routes at the wrong depth and the wrong distance. And, you know, they don't want to hear that. In their mind, they're convinced that Jake is not Superman and, you know, Jake isn't perfect. And so they don't want to hear the offensive coordinator who watches hours of film, who, by the way, has coached and recruited some of those receivers that he's indicting. They don't want to hear them explain that those guys are making Jake look bad with bad routes and their inexperience. They don't want to hear that you want to get the ball to your best guy. I mean, to me, it's really simple, you know, and I'm surprised. I know there's frustrated Georgia fans, but I'm surprised by a lot of the ignorance out there. I mean, look, if you've coached Pee Wee ball, you know, or even if you just watch, you know, it's pretty simple. You get the ball to the best guy. You bat the best player at the top of the lineup. So why is everyone saying Georgia needs to go with four wide receivers and an offense like LSU's when you got a running back with DeAndre Swift? So do you hand the ball to Swift or do you throw it to a guy who's running bad routes and dropping passes? Seems pretty simple to me that you want to put the ball in the hands of your best player. And that's kind of the point Coley made. Now, you can say, well, why don't you have better players? You got all these recruiting classes, and that's where you got to deal with the reality of injuries. And you got to say, well, you know, when Cager was in the game, Jake's completing 70% of his passes. When he's not, he's at 47. So was Cager important? Yep, he was pretty important. But not only that, you had injuries, right? You know, Tyler Simmons. shoulder brace, second game of the year. Demetrius Robertson, hamstring, all year long. That guy's now 100%. He ain't running away from nobody. He couldn't run away from David there. You know, who else you got injured
there? Wait a minute.
Kyrus Jackson, broken hand in the first game. Misses half the season. Tommy Bush, groin injury. He's out. What other injury? You got Dominic Blaylock with a knee injury. He's gone. Who else am I missing, guys? We keep going down the list.
Yeah.
And people say, well, I don't want to hear it. Next man up. Listen. You know, you have underclassmen, Nicole Hardman and Riley Ridley go pro. J.J. Holman gets kicked off. Next man up. Guys, we're seven deep in next man up, all right? Let's stop pretending that Georgia's next man up, seven deep, is going to be a five-star that's going to beat cornerbacks in the SEC at playing press coverage. Let's stop pretending, and let's step back and look at your program objectively and say, you know what? With that attrition at wide receiver, it just ain't our year. Meanwhile, LSU guys are all healthy. And I said this on your show last week or week before. You take away LSU's top three receivers right now, are they in the playoff? I'll tell you what, take away Clyde Edwards-Helaire and their top three receivers, and then give Georgia a healthy Swift and Lawrence Cager and J.J. Holloman and Mecole Hardman, who wins the SEC championship game. Better yet, put Joe Burrow behind the LSU line with those targets, put Jake Fromm on the LSU offense and give Joe Burrow this Georgia team with no DeAndre Swift and these receivers out. Is Georgia doing anything? I don't think so. So, you know, it's a team effort. A quarterback can only do so much. A team can only do so much. If you want to fault Kirby Smart for recruiting great running backs and building a big offensive line and saying that's not what you should have done, should have recruited smaller, faster linemen and run spread and hurry up tempo, then you might as well just hire a different coach. In fact, I think you had a different coach, and you know, he might have run a little bit more of that, and you didn't like him. So, you know, you can't win every year, guys. There are factors. You got to stay healthy. You got to get the breaks. And, you know, the fact that Georgia has won the SEC East three straight years, you know, and I guess I'll make one more point before you ask. You know, talking to Charlie Werner yesterday, and I'm going to write a story on this, but I'll give you a sneak preview. And I said, you know, Charlie, you guys are number five in the country. You're 11-2, and fans are disappointed. I said, do you take any satisfaction or, you know, any perspective from the fact that, you know, during the course of your career, you built this program up to a level where an 11-2 season and a number five ranking is a disappointment? And he said, man, I really don't want to look at it that way. He said, look, we did a lot. You know, we beat Florida. We beat Auburn. You know, we won a lot of games, and we worked really, really hard to do that. And it's really hard to go 11-2. So I don't want anybody to look at it as a disappointment. And I thought, you know what, that's right. You know, I got a buddy that's in sales, and last year he was the number one salesperson in his company in the country. And this year, you know, he went to his convention, and he was the number three salesperson in the country, and he said, I'm kind of bummed out. I said, dude, that's still incredible. He's like, yeah, but, you know, last year I was number – you know, ask yourselves this for the people listening. Are you the number five person in your corporation, in the entire company, out of over 100? Because the Georgia football team is. And right now they got a lot of fans pissing on them and being disappointed in them. And that's after watching what these guys went through to win those football games, the work they put in. I mean, look, man, they beat Florida. They beat Auburn. They beat Tennessee. They beat Notre Dame. Yeah, they didn't win every game, but a lot of work went into what they did do. And all I seem to be seeing on my timeline and Twitter is what Georgia didn't do. And I think that's a loser attitude. I think Georgia fans need to really check themselves. That's my thought right now.
Hey, Mike, before we let you go, you were talking, and I agree with what you're saying about, you know, putting the ball in the hands of your best weapon on offense. If Swift doesn't play or if he's not much of a factor, who should get the most touches? Are we talking Zamir White? James Cook?
No. Everybody. You know, you got to hope Jake makes great decisions at the line of scrimmage and finds the matchup. I mean, that's the thing Jake can do. That other quarterbacks can is he can make decisions at the line of scrimmage, and his supporting cast will be limited. You know, he's going to be down three offensive linemen that are out, You know, is two of the most reliable receivers are gone. You know, Cager and Blaylock. You know, Swift may not play, so it's a pretty depleted group. You got to hope Jake can make plays and find the matchup. I don't think you can rely on just one guy. I don't think there is a bell cow. I think we saw that against LSU, right? I mean, no Swift, and the running game just vanished. It was season-low rushing yardage, you know, and Brian Herring's not here. You know, Brian's one of those guys that got left in Athens, you know, for whatever reason. You know, decisions were made that left him in Athens. That's disappointing to me. He was another guy that was a game captain this year, and I think he was an important part of the team. I think he was an inspirational guy that, you know, everybody looked up to. So, you know, some tough decisions, unfortunate decisions. And, you know, the guys that are here, you know, like you said, Zamir, James Cook, Kenny McIntosh, Jake Fromm, you know, the guys that are playing in the game, Monty Rice, Richard LeCount, you know, you got to hope that they make big plays and that they come through, because they're here to represent Georgia. They're here to try to get that 12th win and send this senior class out with what would be a record, 44 wins over the course of their career. That would tie a Georgia record, which to me says a lot that these seniors have tied a record. But I got a feeling when I look in the stands, there's not going to be a lot of Georgia fans there to cheer them and say thank you for the last 4 years.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike. I know it's an hour early there for you. We do appreciate it, and Happy New Year to you, and we will catch you again next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right. Gone. Mike Griffith.
Got to get that beignet, man.